We've got to stop them building the authoritarian architecture block by block. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics with my latest post covering finance and property news. Robbie Barwick's back for a very important conversation about who's in control, who's controlling the message, and what they are doing to basically try and impose greater control on us. Robbie, nice to see you.
Yeah, you too, Martin. A good start for 2026. This is a very important conversation. It's actually a very urgent conversation because here in Australia, we saw last week just how the body politic here has abandoned any sense of commitment to civil liberties. But there was also a blowback because they tried to rush, but the law, they did pass these laws, but they rushed them through so fast that it's even led to a split in the coalition, right? But the reason we're doing this conversation today is because the Citizens Party has had a unique perspective on this process for 23, 24 years since 9/11. We have seen over 100 such laws rammed through in the name of fighting terrorism that has just absolutely stripped Australians of their traditional civil liberties. And but there's never been this kind of blowback because they've never tried to ram it through so fast. And in this context, we have discovered, and shame on us that we're a little bit late discovering it, but it's not really our fault because it reflects how normalized this has become in the discourse, such that the media has barely covered it. But there is a bill right now before Parliament that was put in before the Bondi Beach massacre, which is so extraordinarily dangerous and broad that it is equally bad to what passed last week, but it will make Australia a permanent police state if it's enacted and we have to expose it.
And I've been following this for a long, long time. And I suppose the 9/11 event was the original excuse for wanting to put in place a whole bunch of things. In some cases, they were successful, in other cases, less successful. But over the period of time, there have been a series of chess moves and pieces have been put up, in some cases thrown out, in some cases they've implemented them. But they've got this clear object to try and get to the point where they are in control of the message, in control of what people can see and believe, and of course take away human rights in the process. And so this latest piece that we're going to talk about is the next step in the road. And you know, I've got this vision of effectively the blocks being put in place quite deliberately over time into a complete police state. And we're not far away now from that being the case, where effectively they can tell you what to believe, how to behave, what to say. And if you try and object, or even if you create an organization to object, then they can say, uh-uh, go away. So this is critical.
Yes. Now, we're still getting analysis being published, Martin, about what was passed last week. And what's most shocking about what was passed last week is that it was passed essentially in a day, because the actual bill was not what Albanese had put up a week earlier. Now, it was already extraordinary. He tried to do it in one week. But the actual bill that passed was redrafted, and they only allowed one day before it got passed. And, of course, that's why even the National Party, which has cheered in every single one of the laws that I'm referring to since 9/11, said, whoa. Now, and so that this is getting a lot of attention. And I think what we need to do is take the fight up about this kind of thing, not give up just because these things have been passed, but specifically use that reaction, the blowback to what was passed last week, to educate people about this bill and build the support to stop it. Now, the bill I'm talking about is called the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation Amendment Bill 20, number 2, 2025. and was actually introduced last August, along with another bill, number one. And I'll explain them by going back in time. So after 9/11, and you know, if you're old enough, you remember 9/11. It was a genuinely shocking event. In America, they ran through the Patriot Act, and suddenly, all the traditional legal protections that Americans had come to expect were being shredded. There was a similar process in many countries around the world. In Australia, in 2002, John Howard unveiled seven counterterrorism bills. Now, they were all extremely broad, but the most controversial was the one about ASIO. But I'll just give you a sense of the others as well. So the sort of like the headline one was a bill which criminalized terrorism as an offense. And that was controversial because any act of terrorism already involves an offense, an existing offense, murder, arson, whatever, right? So why do you need a defined terrorism offense? Well, what they wanted to do was that what was important there was the definition. And this definition was very important so that they could create the framework for the laws that were going to follow. And initially, and this is why parliamentary scrutiny is so important and what we do is so important and taking more than a day to pass a bill is so important. Initially, Howard's definition of terrorism, constitutional experts said, hang on, that could apply to something like a nurse on a union picket line. That's how broad it was. And so after months of debate, and our organization led an intervention, we flooded the Senate with phone calls. We bombarded the Labor Party, especially because we knew that Labor was the key party. They were in opposition then, right? We bombarded them for months, relentlessly. And that we well and truly contributed to the debate. We took out an ad in the Australian newspaper with hundreds of signers on it. End them, don't amend them, right? They're pointing out that these laws were essentially these draconian laws. Well, we went in the Australian, Martin wouldn't let us use the word fascist in the ad. We had to use the word draconian. So we were being censored back then. Anyway, but that law, when it passed, was still bad, but the definition had been modified to be something that wasn't quite as extreme as what it started with, right? So that was one. Then there was a law, and this was also controversial, to ban groups designated as terrorist groups. And again, it's like people were like, oh, hang on, government's banning organizations. Hang on, didn't we learn from Menzies and the Communist Party that's a bridge too far? You don't ban. Anyway, there was a big debate about that, but they got that one through, and that's been used a lot ever since, that banning of terrorist groups. But the big one was the ASIO bill. And because what it did, it crossed the Rubicon, to use that term, because what it gave ASIO were policing powers. Now, given that ASIO is a secret intelligence and security service, by definition, it turned ASIO into a secret police. Until that point, Martin, ASIO had only ever been an intelligence gathering organization, right? A spy organization. And any action that involved policing based on its intelligence was done by police using warrants from a judge, right? So independent judicial oversight of the policing power of the executive. That's how it's supposed to work in a democracy. When they gave ASIO these powers in 2002 or 2003, it passed, but what they proposed for ASIO was they would be given the power to detain and coercively question anybody, you didn't have to be a suspect, anybody that they were interested in questioning, including children, including minors. And coercive questioning means you do not have the right to remain silent. ASIO can force you to answer their questions. And the warrants that the bill provided for were not issued by a judge, i.e. the independent judiciary, but by the Attorney General, who is the government. So the government is directing its secret police to go around and detain people and question them. Now, the detention part of the powers were extraordinary. The government actually proposed originally that they wanted 28 days where you could be basically disappeared off the street you had no right to inform people where you were, and you'd be subject to this ASIO questioning. Over time, that was brought back to 14 days, and initially it was going to be minors as young as 16, and then that is eventually what passed. But again, thanks to our intervention in part, and trust me, that's a whole funny story. If we have more time, we can go through it. But because there was a lot of concern, only the Citizens Party organised itself to lead a big fight on this. And we did lead a big fight. We had unions working with us, and former politicians and sitting politicians, and all sorts of people working with us because we spearheaded the fight. The leader of the Labor Party, Martin, was Simon Crean, and under his leadership, Labor shifted from initially in the spirit of the post 9/11 hysteria. And indicating to Howard they would support his laws because everything was justified because we had this terrorist attack, right? Suddenly civil liberties didn't matter anymore. Public safety was first, right? We've heard how many times this is the narrative, right? Under the intense bombardment that we put on Parliament, Labor shifted. And so they put a line in the sand. They refused to support this ASIO bill. The last sitting day of Parliament in 2002, December 12th, 2002, went for 27 hours straight. Now, as someone who's been regularly watching Parliament and Question Time since I was a teenager, that's how I sort of ended up in politics, I suppose. The last sitting day of Parliament every year is usually one that there's a lot of just, you know, waffle, and Question Time usually ends in this very nice complimentary season's greetings across the dispatch table to each other. Oh yeah, you're my opponent, but it's great working with you, blah, blah, blah. There was nothing like that year. After 27 hours straight, they were enraged at each other. Howard was accusing Simon Crean of being soft on national security. Simon Crean accused Howard of establishing a police state. He was blunt about it, and Labor would not come at it. He said questioning children was not justified, etc. Anyway, they wore them down over time. They still wore them down. It was a 15, after 15 months, and then culminating in the second longest parliamentary debate in history, second only to the Mabo debate, they got the bill through, but only when the government finally relented and put on a sunset clause and said, okay, this bill will expire after 3 years unless Parliament renews it. And that was sort of an acknowledgement that powers like this should be temporary. And hopefully, you know, the terrorism threat will have, you know, the war on terror would have worked and the terrorism threat would have subsided. But Martin, what happens when you give governments power? how regularly do they give them up?
Never.
In fact, hang on, there's one exception, remember. The only time we've seen a politician prepare to give up power was Jim Chalmers. Yeah. 2 years ago, when he wanted to give up his democratic power to overrule the RBA, right, so the bankers could have their full dictatorship. That's the only time. But generally, no. Anyway, so that's what eventually passed, right? And that was one of there were seven original bills. The last time we counted before Bondi, there was over 100 had subsequently passed, including amendments to this ASIO bill, so that over time its powers were expanded. Initially, they brought the age of questioning down to 14-year-olds, right? In 2014, now, Martin, this should be absolutely shocking to everybody. There is a law that says Australian journalists can be jailed for up to 10 years for reporting on an ASIO operation that passed under Tony Abbott in 2014. And there's no public interest defense. In other words, if the journalist sniffs that there's an operation where ASIO agents, i.e. like informers, not officers, agents, people who ASIO is getting to do jobs for them, are law criminals breaking the law, whatever, right? That's in the public interest to know, to expose it so that they stop breaking the law. That's still no defense under this law for reporting on an ASIO operation, and the journalists can still get 10 years for that. And, you know, and I'll tell you how this is how bad the Australian media is. As I was brushing up on this, I mean, you know, we've been monitoring this for a long time, but as I was brushing up on this just the other day, I came across this article, which was one of these ABC fact-checking articles. And they were fact-checking a politician who made reference to this power. This politician said in passing, the government can jail journalists for 10 years for reporting on an ASIO operation. And the media had to fact-check it. And I'm thinking, and the media fact-check said, yeah, it's true. And I'm thinking, hang on, you're the media. This should be on your... this should be on your blackboard or wherever you, however you decorate your bloody offices as the number one thing to get rid of. Do we have a free press in this country or not? And you idiots don't even know about it. It took some politician commenting and you go, oh, is that true? I'm thinking, blimey, I mean, we're the Citizens Party. We're not the media. We know this stuff intimately inside out because this is what has dismantled civil liberties in Australia for 20 years. Right? I couldn't believe it. But then you know what else was surprising about that particular story? The politician who said it in passing and shocked the media, his name was let me try and remember, Anthony Albanese. Anthony Albanese said it. That's back when Albanese was still fat. And so it made me think, well, maybe that's how he lost his soul. He used to be fat and cuddly and moral. Right? And then he sort of got really fit and became the world's supreme asshole. Because despite all that, in August, when his government introduced this bill before Bondi, so we hadn't had a terrorist attack for a decade, none of the bullshit that Bondi justifies everything, before Bondi, they introduced this bill that says this: we will expand the powers of ASIO even further so that there's more subjects it can question people on. And there's one other part, but I want to talk about that first. So these coercive questioning powers in 2002, when they were extremely controversial because the average Australian politician still had a sense of, hang on, this breaches civil liberties, the only way they could justify them was on the ticking time bomb terrorist threat scenario. That they are, you know, planes are flying into buildings. We have to have these powers to avert a terrorist attack. You cannot have people refuse to answer questions, right? The clock is ticking. The time bomb's about to go off. We must know that, protect lives. That was the rationale. The rationale. They are now expanding those powers. And actually, they already expanded some in 2020, which we didn't know about because the government, again, the media didn't pay attention. They've expanded those powers to include ASIO's other areas of interest, which include espionage, foreign interference, right-wing activity, virtually none of which involves such a dire life or death ticking time bomb scenario. None of it, especially foreign interference. The only person who's been found guilty of foreign interference in Australia is a poor 70-year-old Chinese bloke who donated $37,500 to the Royal Children's Hospital in COVID. And because he said to his friends, oh, this will be good for us Chinese, i.e. his Chinese community, he was trying to buy goodwill at a time when the Chinese were being bashed on the street. That was construed against him as, oh, this is, you're preparing for it. You haven't foreignly interfered. You're preparing for an act of foreign interference. Anyway, whatever it is, there's no ticking time bomb scenario. There's no urgency. Yet that which was the only rationale back in 2002 suddenly is like, who cares? These powers are normal now. We should have this secret police doing this. So this bill that's there now expands it even more, the scope of questioning, to include literally everything that ASIO pays attention to. It can drag people in and question them, and they've got no right to silence. And most alarming, Martin, they have removed the sunset clause. This bill will make these secret police powers for ASIO permanent for all time. That is how much we have shifted as a country since 2002. After two decades, 100 of these laws, they have become normalized. We have accepted having a secret police apparatus in Australia. We have accepted being a police state. Well, I thought we had until last week. And so Now that I've seen that the public, and I think Albanese made a real strategic blunder in ramming it through so fast, because people just like, "Whoa, this is a bit too fast. We better look at this for once," right? And there was this enormous backlash to it. My message to the public is: look at the whole picture, because this is not new. And now they're putting in the, I won't say it's the final brick in the wall, but it's like another, it's another cornerstone, right, to actually shore up this wall of authoritarian control and make it absolutely permanent.
And that's really the point, isn't it, Robbie? Because each of those incremental steps, people might look at it in isolation and say, "Oh, well, that doesn't look particularly good, but well, maybe we'll let that pass." But when you stand back and look at the whole architecture, essentially it means that they can define what truth is, who is actually, on the wrong side of the fence, as it were, in even the thought. Even before you do something, it's like the Minority Report, right? Even the thought crime, that's where they want to get to. And I go back to 1984, and I keep saying, that 1984 parable is unfortunately coming true, and the political system has just pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. And when they didn't get the first attempt to be able to actually control social media, they came back and tried another route, which was a little more successful, although I'm still very skeptical of the whole process there. And so the problem we've got is that there are so few people who, one, get the big picture, and two, are clear-sighted enough to see where this leads, because it leads ultimately to a completely controlled police state where people will be quiescent because there's nothing else they can do. And that means that effectively our political masters, all praise the political masters, they'll be able to say, "Do this, do that, we'll do this, do that." And we've got nowhere to run. This is where we're headed. And we're so close now to the end game where it will be impossible even to talk about this stuff.
And that's why we have to fight it and keep fighting it, and look for opportunities where it's not just, a night in which all cows are black and we're in a permanent war on this stuff, but understand that there are times when there's the other side weakens, and there's a strategic opportunity to actually achieve something, and I think we have one now. So just to wrap this up for now, Martin, because what I want to announce now is basically this is the beginning of a big fight. I've just finished drafting a petition that we will publish early next week. So what I'm saying to your viewers, please share this video, but look out for announcements from the Citizens Party, and I'll come back and keep you informed, of course, Martin, and we can keep making announcements through this channel. But we're going to launch a petition. We will provide information where people can make submissions to this. There's a parliamentary inquiry being conducted by the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security. Now, that's been going since August, but and submissions have closed, technically, except they always take late submissions. So we want to bombard them with a flood of late submissions, right? Just to as a shockwave. But the real work will be done. The real work will be done with phone calls and emails to MPs and senators, right? Especially coalition, like the opposition senators, because that Albanese statement I referred to earlier, what it shows you is, don't believe any politician who is in opposition, and don't believe any major party politician who's in opposition, right? They will tell you what you want to hear. Don't try and appeal to their reason. You've got to frighten them. You've got to frighten them with a wave of with numbers, with massive numbers that force them to sometimes take a stand, otherwise wouldn't take a stand. Because, what he sounded like on principle 10 years ago, he's now the guy implementing this, right? This takes it much further than any of his predecessors, much further. So we need to bombard those politicians and make sure that we can organize the numbers to stop it in the Senate. And in fact, this is an area, this is one thing that the one of the things that there's a good chance the Greens will also be inclined to oppose this, right? So if we can get the Greens and the coalition and the crossbench or most of the crossbench to oppose it. We can actually turn this into a bigger issue. Now, this will what we're launching. I can't give you a time frame because I don't know how Parliament comes back next week on Monday for the normal setting. What we had last week was an extraordinary sitting. I can't tell you how quickly now that this the government's going to take this bill out of committee and try and put it through, right? But we will, nevertheless, it's before committee now. We will be intervening on that basis at this time to actually cause a stink here, right? And force more scrutiny or even get people to vote against it completely. And this is going to be, while we're doing this, this is going to be coinciding with the Royal Commission into what happened in Bondi. And initially, I was, there was a big pile on, and, as you can tell, I'm no fan of Anthony Albanese, but there was a big politicized pile on that we have never seen before in Australian politics straight after Bondi to blame Albanese personally for Bondi. And that's just absolute garbage. But in that context, he initially resisted the idea of a Commonwealth Royal Commission. And what made me suspicious about that, and I wasn't interested, there was an organized campaign to get him to do one, and people who were doing that for their own reasons. But I thought it was a mistake, and I thought it was a deliberate mistake, because a Commonwealth Royal Commission is what you need if you're going to look at ASIO. And what I know, because we have followed this so closely for so long, is ASIO is a protected species. It is the secret police. Do you know, Martin, there was probably sometime more than a decade ago, I kid you not, there was reports that politicians became aware that ASIO was tapping their phones in Parliament. Now, let me tell you something. When ASIO and our version of MI6 called ASIS first started in 1949, so in the 50s, all the politicians in Australia were skeptical of them, right? They barely survived. The politicians were like, hang on, what are you? They were really suspicious of having this kind of secret police apparatus. Over the last 70 years, the culture has completely changed, and now all the politicians are completely submissive to it. Nobody questions ASIO. Well, I question ASIO, and what I want to know is this. I've just described to you the most extraordinary secret police powers you've never heard of are in ASIO's possession. They knew the shooter at Bondi, Mark. They were given these powers to stop those kinds of terrorist attacks. They failed. Why does Mike Burgess still have a job? They failed at their job. This is what we gave them these extraordinary powers for. And if they didn't know the perpetrator, I wouldn't be so fired up. But they knew the perpetrator. And people were saying in the few days after Bondi, how did ASIO get this wrong? Now nobody's saying it. The Prime Minister is getting up there with Mike Burgess and just accepting everything he says. The opposition is never going to question him. And we have to question it, right? We had, like, who was it? It's like, who was head of the Gestapo? Himmler, I think Himmler, if I'm remembering my World War II history right, you might know better than me. I think Himmler was head of the Gestapo. It's like everyone in Germany saying, oh, don't question Himmler. No, bloody question Himmler, right? You've got to question Himmler. Now, I'm going to get in trouble for making that comparison, but stuff him, right? Because what my argument is, when we said after Nazi Germany, never again, right? You can't just say never again in terms of the consequences. You've got to say never again in terms of the structures that led to the consequences. And the structures that led to the consequences were the Nazi Party seized on the Reichstag fire in 1933, which they probably lit, to say Germany's under attack, we need to keep you safe, give us emergency powers. The Parliament voted them emergency powers. They were given to the Nazis democratically. And then he used those emergency powers to become a dictator, and the rest was history, right? And so that mechanism of seizing on an emergency to say we need emergency powers, that's where you say, no, history teaches us we need checks and balances. You don't do this. Well, we've done it in the 21st century, right? Not as extreme. I don't want to draw that comparison yet. Not as extreme, or at least yet. Or not as extreme if you're not in one of the countries that we've been bombing for 20 years as well, right? But nevertheless, it's the same kind of mechanism. And now, just learn from this fact that 20 years ago, this was so controversial. It was the second longest debate in parliamentary history. Now, no one's talking about it. Martin, the inquiry that I'm going to ask people to intervene on, that's where the submissions have closed, has received six submissions. The inquiry 2 weeks ago that Albanese set, a three-day inquiry into his bills that he was trying to ram through, nevertheless, they tried to go through the motions and have a three-day inquiry, a ridiculous three-day inquiry, got 7,000 submissions. That's how fired up Australians became when they were aware of this. And that 7,000 submissions in 3 days has broken every record that you and I've ever been involved in, right? Extraordinary. This ASIO one, with far-reaching consequences, received six submissions. And I apologise on behalf of the Citizens Party. We're trying to stay on top of a lot of things. You do rely on getting some information from the media about what's going on. A lot of things are happening in Parliament all the time. You do rely on the media doing their job. The media did not do their job and report this properly, that they're going to try and make these powers permanent. So because we're uniquely positioned to know the history, we're blowing the whistle on it. So we got what we're going to need people to do is look for the in the coming days, look for the announcements of the Citizens Party that here's the petition, here's the inquiry to intervene on by sending an email to the inquiry. We'll provide that information and call your members of Parliament. We'll actually provide the email for the committee now. You can, based on this conversation, you can go and look at it. But if you want to wait till next week when we put out written material, right, that's probably better, and you can use that to help you write your email. But please get involved in this. It's really, really crucial, because if we just let this stuff happen, we accept it's the new normal, then we're the problem.
And I want to make one quick point, Robbie. This has been a 20-year journey, you know, as these blocks have been put in place. So there is an architecture that someone is thinking about in terms of putting those pieces in. Now, by definition, it can't be one political party, because we've had several political parties through that period of time. So behind the scenes, there is an agency or some people who've got a vision of the way that they want Australia to work, which is actually based around this, you know, police state and what have you, right? And I suspect they've got the politicians pretty much dancing to their tune. So the real question here is, when are politicians going to actually grow a backbone?
Yep. And Martin, I hope intelligent viewers recognize the, you know, that what you have just supposed then is an intelligent supposition, right? That, yeah, there must be something like that going on. But in this particular case, we have the evidence. And the evidence came out of the mouth of Mike Pezzullo. Now, there's a little video clip that people can actually see this. Mike Pezzullo is one of the most powerful public servants in recent times, but he had to resign in disgrace because he got so powerful. He's the guy that got caught sending WhatsApp messages to Scott Morrison's chief advisor, and whose name is Scott Briggs. And Pezzullo and Briggs were deciding between them who would be cabinet ministers. So here's Morrison, the prime minister. It's his job, the elected prime minister, it's his job to pick the cabinet from his fellow elected politicians. These two unelected bureaucrats, well, one, the head, Pezzullo was the head of the Department of Home Affairs, which is the department besides the Attorney General Department, which wields these powers, right? He was the secretary of that. He was Peter Dutton's alter ego. He and Dutton had shadowed each other all the way until Dutton went into defense. Pezzullo was always his department secretary back in immigration and things like that. So these two were a double act. One of the most sinister people in the history of Australian politics, Mike Pezzullo. He got caught wielding real power behind the scenes, and he had to resign in disgrace. But the other factor that I like pointing out to people is, remember, what was the nature of the government that he was doing this in? We found out after Morrison lost just how much power he had personally grabbed for himself by having himself appointed to these ministries secretly that his colleagues didn't even know. Right, he was secretly the second treasurer and second this and second that. What, he had six extra portfolios or something. His colleagues didn't even know he had done that. He amassed more power for himself than any prime minister in Australian history. And Pezzullo was one of his apparatchiks, right? So 2 weeks ago, when they had this, so they allowed 3 days for a parliamentary submissions, 2 days or 1 day, maybe 2 days, for hearings, 2 days for hearings, and Pezzullo appeared before the hearing.
You've got, Senator, I think, before you, given how you motioned your hand before, a printout, I think, of both the bill and the explanatory memorandum.
That's correct.
I was in this game for a very long time. I can absolutely assure this committee that there is no way that those concepts, those ideas, the passages that have been drafted in with all the footnotes just fell into people's minds on the evening of the 14th of December. Mm. There is absolutely no way that that's occurred. So to the extent that these ideas were around, they were in bottom drawers, they maybe had been proposed, maybe they'd been rejected, maybe they'd been not considered by governments of different persuasions or considered and set aside. Are they therefore the most important things we need to do now? I would argue some of them were important things we needed to do 2 years ago.
Yep.
When we heard the cries on the Opera House steps, and I'm going to have to repeat the horrific phrase, kill the Jews, for instance, we should have moved on this front and many other fronts that night. Mm. Now, whether in a causal sense, and this is a matter for the Royal Commission, not for this committee, that ultimately would have seen those people not be killed on that horrific evening, is something that's going to vex us until we get some answers to that. Yeah. So, yes, are these important now? Yes, they are. Mm. Damn straight they are. But they're also important 2.5 years ago. Why weren't they pursued then? Thank you.
Spazillo, it'd be fair to say, though, these concepts have not just been kicking around the last 12 or 18 months, but a bit longer than that. I mean, anti-Semitism has been around for a very long time, sadly.
Yes.
It's fair to say, even during your tenure as Secretary, sure, these concepts would have also kicked around.
I've made a commitment. I know I'm here under parliamentary privilege, but I've always made a commitment to not betray confidences, mm-hmm. cabinet or otherwise, of both governments, both types of government that I served, perhaps.
Sure, I guess where I'm going at is I just wouldn't want to have your evidence characterised as an attack on this government, but, I mean, governments on both persuasions, you know, have had to deal with these issues.
I agree, Senator, and for me it's not whether it's Labor or Liberal. I don't care who was in power as at the October 23. Whoever was in power, I think there was a particular responsibility that was as plain as the nose on your and my face that things were going to get dramatically worse after Hamas attacked Israel on the 7th of October, and we only needed two nights of confirmation before we saw the vile hatred of Jews expressed in front of an iconic Sydney landmark.
He said these provisions were not thought up after Bondi. They're already pre-thought of and sitting in drawers ready to go. That's what he admitted. The guy who knows the system better than anybody publicly admitted that. Right? He said, I can assure you that's people have to take this stuff seriously. Right? But there's an opportunity to intervene, Martin. So please, we've done something unusual today because this is really early in the morning. Usually early in the morning your time and in the evening my time, but we've switched it around. This is early in the morning my time and the evening your time. I've actually literally got to go to work. But stay tuned. In the coming days, we'll put out the material and please act on it and we'll keep you updated.
Robbie, thank you so much. Very disturbing, but very important and an opportunity to act. We will keep everyone informed.
Thanks, Martin.
Cheers.